This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is David Wilcove, Professor of Ecology, Evolutionary Biology, and Public Affairs at Princeton University. One of the world's leading experts on endangered species, he is author of The Condor's Shadow, The Loss and Recovery of Wildlife in America, and numerous scientific and popular articles on wildlife conservation. David Wilcove is here today to tell us about his most recent book, No Way Home, The Decline of the World's Great Animal Migrations. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why are animal migrations important and worthy of protection?
Animal migrations are aesthetically dazzling. I think they're one of the most spectacular sights in nature. But they're also very important both ecologically and economically. That is to say, migratory animals serve a variety of important ecosystem services. Migrating birds help to protect forests from defoliating insects. Migrating salmon actually transport nutrients from the ocean to the rivers to keep the rivers productive. And migratory species are important economically in terms of things like the harvest of salmon or other fish that migrate.
What are common characteristics of animal migrations?
The range of animals that migrate is extraordinary. Everything from dragonflies and butterflies to whales and elephants. So it spans really the full range of animal diversity. What they tend to have in common, though, is that by virtue of the long distances they travel, they are quite vulnerable to habitat destruction on their breeding grounds, on their wintering grounds, or in the stopover places in between. And in some cases, because some species aggregate in large herds or flocks or schools, they are vulnerable to over-exploitation by people.
What are the benefits of migration for an individual species? Why do animals migrate?
It looks as though in most cases, migration is really all about opportunism. It's about animals moving to an area where there are abundant resources, food principally, resources they can take advantage of for a period of time, but they have to leave. So for example, from the point of view of a bird, nesting in the North Woods provides all sorts of insects to raise offspring. And, of course, any of us who has dealt with the black flies or mosquitoes in the North Woods would agree with that. It's a great place for insects, and for birds, that means it's got a lot of food. But on the other hand, once the winter comes, that food is gone, and the animal has to leave. So for most migratory species, what we're talking about is opportunism, getting into an area where there are abundant resources, taking advantage of that bounty, but then leaving before conditions change for the worse.
Could you say more about how animal migrations benefit ecosystems?
Sure. Let me give you an example from the Pacific Northwest. Salmon are born in streams and rivers and freshwater, and then when they're very small, they migrate out to the ocean. And in the ocean, they take advantage of all of the food in the ocean, and they grow to be reasonably large. And then when they've reached their adult size, they come back up the rivers, they spawn, and they die, and they decompose. And when they decompose, all of the nutrients in their bodies, nutrients that were gathered during their time in the ocean, these nutrients are released to the rivers. So what salmon really become are self-propelled bags of fertilizer, taking nutrients from the ocean and delivering it to the rivers. And in fact, studies have shown that in the wine country of California, a significant fraction of the nitrogen growing in the leaves of the grapes is nitrogen that originated with salmon. The salmon brought it from the ocean to the river. It got into the river. It got onto the land. And it's important for the health of the grape plants. So really, we're seeing in the case of salmon, an important benefit that they provide in terms of redistributing nutrients.
How do animals know how to migrate? What mechanism do they use?
That's still a very active area of research. We know for some species, for example, for migratory birds, that they have an internal compass that they set each day with the setting sun. There is some evidence that birds can observe the apparent motion of the stars in the sky the way sailors have done for centuries. They may be able to perceive the Earth's magnetic field. In the case of insects such as monarch butterflies, we're not entirely certain what allows them to migrate to Mexico, but they do seem to have both an internal compass, and they may also have the ability to perceive magnetic fields. So there seems to be a number of mechanisms operating with different types of animals, and it all remains a very lively area of research as scientists employ new technology to understand some of the secrets of migration.
How are migrations studied? What are some of the tools used?
We're entering a golden age for studying animal migration because of some of the breakthroughs in technology. So to give you a couple of examples, we can now attach transmitters that weigh 1/100th of an ounce to the belly of a dragonfly and track that dragonfly as it migrates south. Much larger transmitters that beam up to satellites can be put on larger animals, such as tuna or whales or polar bears or even certain birds. And the movements of those animals can be tracked by satellite so that a biologist can sit in his or her office, look at a computer, and know where an animal is as it migrates. There have also been breakthroughs in chemistry such that we can pluck a feather from a migrating bird, analyze the composition of the feather, the minerals and such, and in that way get a pretty good idea where the bird had to be when it grew that feather. And we can use that to uncover some of the wintering grounds for different species of birds.
How robust are animal migrations worldwide? What is happening to the migratory way of life?
It appears as though around the world, the great animal migrations are in trouble. That is to say, we're seeing the loss of certain populations of migratory species, big declines in others. So it really looks as though the great animal migrations should be considered akin to endangered natural phenomena and protected because of all of the benefits they provide.
What are some examples of great migrations that still exist and are robust?
In the Serengeti, for example, the migration of well over 1 million wildebeest and hundreds of thousands of zebra and Thompson's gazelle, that migration is pretty much intact. The Kenyan and Tanzanian governments created two contiguous national parks that more or less cover the entire migratory route of those herds. And so as a result, that migration is reasonably well protected and remains abundant. But on the other hand, if you take a look at the monarch butterfly migration, virtually all of the monarch butterflies in eastern North America funnel into a very small area in central Mexico, where they winter in fir forests, and these forests provide the butterflies with protection from the cold and the rain. Yet these forests are being logged illegally, and that certainly threatens the continued health of monarch populations in eastern North America.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with David Wilcove, Professor of Ecology, Evolutionary Biology, and Public Affairs at Princeton University, and author of the book, No Way Home, The Decline of the World's Great Animal Migrations. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. What are some additional examples of great migrations that are under threat and/or have been destroyed?
interestingly enough, the United States has the dubious honor of having eradicated two of the greatest animal migrations on Earth. One was the migration of the passenger pigeon in eastern North America. And in colonial days, that bird was thought to be so abundant that its migration in the spring and fall literally blocked out the sun and put the areas where the birds were migrating to in this sort of eerie twilight. There were so many billions of passenger pigeons migrating. And yet, those passenger pigeons all nested in a small number of immense colonies, and people destroyed the colonies, killing the birds for food, for sport, and as a result, the passenger pigeon disappeared at the turn of the 19th, 20th century. The second great animal migration that once occurred in the United States and was eradicated was the bison in the Great Plains. There may have been tens of millions of bison in the Great Plains in the early 1800s, but they were ruthlessly overexploited to the point where by the late 1800s, the bison was truly on the brink of extinction. Now, they've staged a wonderful recovery, but we no longer have anything approaching the great herds of bison that we once had.
You've alluded to this earlier, but in what ways are animals vulnerable when they migrate? What are the main threats to migration at present?
The threats to the migratory animals are, in many respects, the same threats to any animals. They're vulnerable to the destruction of their habitat, or to over-exploitation, or to disease, or even to climate change. The problem with migratory species is that because they wander over such large areas, I think they are vulnerable to habitat destruction in more places, and they also often aggregate in large numbers, which makes them vulnerable to over-exploitation. And of course, because they often move between very different environments, climate change is another significant threat to them.
In your book, you speak about species that migrate by air, by water, and by land. Looking at these different types of migration, is one particular type more at risk than others?
That's a great question. I don't think any one type of migration is more imperiled than the others, because all of them can be disrupted in some way. I suppose it's somewhat easier to block the migration of a school of fish by constructing a dam across a river than it is to block the migration of animals within the ocean. But on the other hand, with all of our big commercial fishing fleets out in the ocean, it's not that difficult to over-harvest an ocean-dwelling species either. So really, I think all of these migratory phenomena have significant threats. And it would be tricky to say that it's safer to go by air than by water than by land.
Could you expand on the potential threats posed to migrations from climate change?
Climate change is going to have an interesting impact on migratory species, and we're still attempting to figure out what that would be. But I can give you a couple of examples. Sea turtles, for example, each of the species tends to nest in a relatively small number of beaches that they use for generations upon generations. And a rising sea level could easily submerge those beaches, essentially eliminating the nesting habitat for the sea turtles. Even if the beaches aren't submerged, the sex of a baby sea turtle is determined by the temperature at which the egg is incubated. So a rising temperature leading to warmer conditions in the sand where the eggs are laid could affect the sex ratio, which could be harmful to the population. Or to give you another example, migratory songbirds seem to time their return migration to the emergence of insects in the forest, in particular caterpillars that they feed on. If due to climate change the caterpillars emerge earlier, the migrating birds may not find enough food to sustain them during their migratory journey or when they reach their breeding grounds.
What are some of the best approaches to protecting animal migrations?
I think there are two key ingredients here. The first is there has to be greater cooperation between government agencies, states, countries, all of these administrative boundaries that are important to us but are really meaningless to the animals themselves. So we have to coordinate conservation efforts across the migratory routes of these species. The second thing is we need to be more proactive in our conservation. We tend to wait until a species is highly endangered before we protect it. But the ecological and economic importance of migratory animals stems from their abundance. It's the fact that there are billions of songbirds eating vast numbers of insects that helps to keep our forests healthy. And for that reason, it's important that we protect these species while they're still common, that we don't wait for them to become endangered before we do so.
Which migration should have the highest priority for protection? What criteria should we use?
Oh, that's a Sophie's choice sort of question, and I'm not sure I can give you a good answer to that. Because deciding which migrations to protect involves weighing a number of different factors. The ecological importance of a migration, its economic importance, its aesthetic appeal, and I don't know of any easy way to balance all of those factors.
What groups are working most toward protection of migration?
A number of the conservation organizations that focus on wildlife are trying to save some of the important animal migrations. And I'm thinking of large organizations like the World Wildlife Fund or Conservation International or the Wildlife Conservation Society, as well as smaller organizations like the American Bird Conservancy. But a number of the groups that are interested in protecting wildlife have become increasingly concerned about the fate of migratory species.
What are some examples of migrations that have been successfully protected that were initially endangered or threatened?
I think my favorite example involves gray whales along the Pacific coast. The gray whale was brought to the brink of extinction by whaling in the 1800s. And by about the 1920s, there may have been fewer than 100 or 200 gray whales left. The animal was protected, and it has staged a remarkable recovery. In fact, today, there are probably as many gray whales alive as there were 150 years ago. They were taken off the endangered species list because they have done so well, and people up and down the Pacific coast can now enjoy them during their spring and fall migration.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is David Wilcove, Professor of Ecology, Evolutionary Biology, and Public Affairs at Princeton University, and author of the book, No Way Home, The Decline of the World's Great Animal Migrations. What are some of the efforts to protect migrations between countries?
I spoke about one example, which was the creation of back-to-back reserves in Kenya and Tanzania to protect the great migration of wildebeest, zebras, gazelles in the Serengeti. Another example that I like very much is the work of the American Bird Conservancy, which has purchased land in Colombia, which is an important wintering ground for a songbird known as the cerulean warbler. And the cerulean warbler breeds in the eastern United States and Canada, and it winters in the Andes. And it is being harmed by habitat destruction at both ends of its range. That is to say, in the eastern United States, many of the forests where it occurs are being destroyed, particularly due to the horrible practice of mountaintop removal mining in the Appalachians. And in the Andes in South America, where it winters, much of the forest habitat is being converted to agriculture. So the American Bird Conservancy, which has largely a United States membership, recognizes that in order to save this bird in the United States, it's important to protect its habitat in South America. And I think that type of cross-border conservation is going to be critical to protecting a variety of species.
What do you see as the major challenges or roadblocks in protecting migrations?
Certainly, all of the administrative and national boundaries that we have pose an obstacle. That is to say, getting the different states within a country and the different countries to cooperate is a key issue. The second is getting people concerned about migratory species so that they want to save them while they're still common, so that they don't wait until the 11th hour. And I think third is simply making more people aware of how vulnerable many of these animal migrations are, and also how important they are to us.
Which migrations that are currently threatened are most hopeful in terms of being able to save or reverse the trend toward destruction?
Well, I am generally optimistic in the sense that most of our migratory songbirds, for example, still have reasonably healthy populations. And so if we take steps to safeguard their habitats now, we can continue to have large numbers of them well into the future. In the Pacific Northwest, there's been a great deal of attention given to the recovery of salmon. And I'm encouraged by some of the steps that private individuals, state governments, and the federal government are taking to restore salmon habitat in the Northwest. I would say the problem of conserving migratory species is great, but we certainly have the means to do so, and in many places we're seeing a growing interest in protecting them.
Which migrations do you see as least likely to be saved?
I'm concerned about species that become so rare that it's difficult to imagine what steps we can take now to save them. So there's a lovely sandpiper in Europe called the slender-billed curlew. It actually nests up in Siberia, migrates through the Mediterranean, and probably winters in North Africa and perhaps portions of the Middle East. It's now down to just a handful of individuals, and it's really hard to imagine what we can do at this stage to protect the tiny population that may exist. In North America, in contrast to the success story of the gray whale, we have the North Atlantic right whale. And that animal has remained very rare for really a couple of centuries now. And despite protection under the Endangered Species Act, the population does not show any evidence of a big increase. And the problem there is all of the commercial ship traffic up and down the East Coast and all of the fishing poses threats to the whales because they are vulnerable to collisions with ships, and they sometimes get entangled with fishing gear. And I just don't see the U.S. government acting aggressively enough to protect the whales from these threats.
Is it possible to restore great migrations such as the bison in the U.S.?
I don't think we really can bring back the great migrations in their full glory, because by the time they've disappeared, it's usually because we have so altered the habitat that there just isn't room for them anymore. We don't have room for tens of millions of bison on the Great Plains anymore. And so I think we ought to look at the really great animal migrations, the truly spectacular ones, as irreplaceable resources and accord them a great deal of protection.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I hope they will find animal migrations as fascinating and as inspiring as I do, and come away with a sense that if we are successful at protecting habitats for these migratory species. If we eliminate threats to them, like global warming, what we're really doing is creating a much healthier environment for us as well as for the animals. That we can think of these migratory species as sentinels, as indicators of the health of the environment, and ultimately what we do on their behalf will redound to our own benefit.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
We have just been speaking with David Wilkov, Professor of Ecology, Evolutionary Biology, and Public Affairs at Princeton University, and author of the book, No Way Home, The Decline of the World's Great Animal Migrations, published in October 2007 by Island Press. For more information, check on the web at www.islandpress.org. Again, that's islandpress.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.